Hello, I'm Kelly Klinger. I am a former extra on the Mickey Mouse Club and was once a background singer for Britney Spears. I am a daughter, a sister, a wife, and a mother. I am a songwriter, a friend, a blogger, and a Christian. I am also a post-abortive woman who has lived with paralyzing self-hatred and suffocating guilt because of my choices. After finding healing in the arms of a loving God, I also found a resounding voice inside of me to speak up for those who cannot speak for themselves, for the unborn babies who are no longer safe inside the womb, and for the millions of women who are feeling the destruction and pain that abortion leaves in its path. Please join me for the Colorado March for Life on January 21st at 12 o'clock noon at the Colorado State Capitol as I honor my children in heaven and all of the lives that have been stolen by the abortion industry. Help us continue our fight to end abortion now and promote personhood in Colorado by adding your voice to mine. I hope to see you there.
One warning, there's truth up ahead. It gets beyond all the headlines you read. Don't need lip service with a wink and a nod. You need a man on a mission from God. Well, not to worry, here's Bob in your life.
Greetings to the brightest audience in the country. I am Bob Inyart, the pastor of Denver Bible Church. There's an East Coast atheist blogger named Stax Roche, who, like me, was born in northern New Jersey. He has a master's degree in philosophy, and I'll read to you his blog account of how we've arranged to interview him today. Quote, I will be a guest of the fundamentalist Christian radio show Bob Inyart Live. Hemant Mehta, that's another atheist, the friendly atheist, was a guest for two segments of Bob Inyart Live. In the first segment, he did okay, but the second half hour, he really was getting frustrated and, in my opinion, got slaughtered. He attributed to the old bait and switch, but the fact is that he did no opposition research. Wherever you go on Christian radio, you really have to expect them to be hostile and be pleasantly surprised if they are not. In any case, I was critical of his performance on his blog, and so Bob Inyart's producer checked out dangeroustalk.net, that is the website of Stax Roche, and asked me if I was interested. So, yes, Stax said he was interested, so I emailed to him a list of possible topics for our discussion, being the existence of God, the origin of life, the origin of the universe, the resurrection of Christ, the young age of the earth, on right and wrong, morality, or whatever other topic he would like to choose. Stax wrote back, quote, I definitely want to talk about morality and the existence of God. I also want to talk about faith and the scientific method and the greater atheistic community. So from dangeroustalk.net, welcome to Bob Inyart Live to the prepared atheist, Stax Roche. Hey, Stax.
Hi, how you doing, Bob?
I'm doing well. Where in New Jersey were you born?
Northern New Jersey, just outside New York City, Bergen County area.
Yeah, I'm from Passaic County. What's your age?
I'm 36.
36, okay. I'm 52. So, hey, okay. Stax, really, welcome to the show.
Thank you. I hope to be pleasantly surprised.
Well, that's pretty neat. And if I make an error in an argument, I hope you're able to identify it and correct it.
I will certainly try.
Okay, so morality and God, that's the first subject that you indicated.
I do want to start off talking about atheism, though, because I
think
there's a little confusion about what atheism is. For starters, I'm the coordinator for an organization called PhillyCor, Philadelphia Coalition of Reason, and we're like an umbrella group for seven atheist groups within the Philadelphia region.
All right.
But there's also a group called United Core, which is the umbrella group for all the Coalition of Reasons. And atheists from all over the country can find groups in their areas by going to unitedcore.org. Core is just C-O-R. And because you're in Colorado, Colorado has their own core group that has about 13 organizations for atheists in the state of Colorado.
Yeah, we've probably debated a number of them, Stax.
Okay. And their web address is CO for Colorado and then CORE for core.org.
All right.
And so if any of your listeners are curious to check out atheist groups, that would be a good place to go, or unitedcorps.org there, somewhere else across the country.
Yes, and if they go, Stacks, they could go to our website, kgov.com, kgov.com, and, for example, click on Real Science Friday, and we have a whole list of many of the well-known atheists that we've debated over the years. In fact, you mentioned in one of your blogs about meeting Michael Newdow.
Yes.
And it reminded me that we don't have our debate with Michael on our handy list of atheists we've debated, so we'll add him this week to that handy list. The debate is on our website.
Michael Newdow a couple of times. He's a very knowledgeable guy. Mm.
Yeah, it was fun to talk with him. The debate itself is on our website. Just search for Newdow at kgov.com, but we're going to add him to our handy list. Okay.
Now, as far as atheism goes, people are confused. They think atheism is a competing religion, and it's not. Atheism is just a label that we've been slapped on with that just means that we lack a belief in theism, which is God.
Right. And, of
course, there's no coherent doctrine of atheism.
And, of course, it's difficult to prove a negative, which is true. So an atheist could rightly object.
I think I'm losing your connection here.
Oh, can you hear me okay, Stax?
Now let's fast forward to a little later in the broadcast.
Testing 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. Okay, so I apologize for that. Obviously, we were able to hear Stax really well. We have, for those of you who are curious, we have a phone system called the Gentner, and that's industry standard throughout the radio industry and even around the world, not only in the U.S. Gentners are a leading brand for taking phone calls and putting them on the air. You can't hear me, Stax?
Hello?
All right. Maybe the phone is possessed. Come out! Come out! Trying to get the demon out of the phone. So we have a couple topics we want to discuss, morality and God, and then faith and the scientific method. Those are two topics. And we're trying right now to get Stax Roche back on. If that doesn't happen for some reason, I'll go through my notes. And if he'd like to try this again on another day, another program, he'll be able to listen to today's program and get a heads up. And that's always best. At Bob and Yurt Live, when we debate folks, whether it's a written debate or verbal debates, we even offer to debate groups and organizations because we don't want to win a debate because we were more well-prepared or just had the better debating style, or could just put somebody on hold and not let them talk. If we win a debate, we want it to be because we're right. One of the worst things is winning an argument when you're wrong. That is really a terrible thing, to win an argument when you're wrong. So, hey, Stax.
Yes, I'm back.
All right. Welcome back to Bob and Yurt Live. Well, last time we interviewed you, Stax, we had a great discussion, and now here we are again, 3 minutes later. So, Stax, you were talking about atheism, what atheism is, that you guys got stuck with this label. And,
right.
And I was agreeing with many atheists when they say it's hard to prove a negative. So if you're trying to prove that God doesn't exist, an atheist will understandably complain, well, if God exists behind a moon of a planet, of a star, 50 million light years away, then how am I supposed to prove that he doesn't exist? And so that's understandable. So
yes, that is a standard argument, yes.
Yeah, so I will always stipulate that if we can't prove that God exists here and now in the world that we live in and experience every day, then we have failed to meet the burden of proof, and the atheist has won. So I'll stipulate that.
I will take it a step further and say that we can disprove certain negatives within a reasonable doubt. I mean, nobody's going to argue that Darth Vader, for instance, is real. Can you prove that Darth Vader is not?
Right.
Well, we have some idea where we can say, We know the idea of Darth Vader came to the mind of George Lucas, and we know George Lucas got those ideas from some of these influences here. So there's a
widespread general consensus, although I think you and I could agree that general consensus has often been wrong.
That's true.
And there are some...
So you can't really prove it with certainty, but you can prove it reasonably, with reasonable certainty, as I like to say.
There are some perhaps certifiable people who have turned George Lucas' World of the Force and all on the dark side into a virtual religion.
Right, and I... Be honest with you.
Yeah,
I support that. I don't believe in Star Wars as a literal thing, but as a metaphorical thing. I think there's a lot of wisdom within George Lucas's ideology and philosophy.
So
like
you
that's a little bit more of a tangent.
Yeah, it is. So you like his worldview,
right?
And I you know what I like? I like that when the bad guys. Turn bad when they're good, like Anakin Skywalker, and they turn bad, it's because they murder the innocent. They're guilty.
Right.
Their heart gets hard. But then in the end, if they repent, like Darth Vader did, there can be redemption and reconciliation when they return to what is good and right. So I like that part of it, too.
There is a redemption theme to it. Christianity doesn't hold a monopoly on redemption, though.
It depends. That depends on whether Christianity is true or false, right?
Well, even if it were true, it wouldn't necessarily follow that it would have the monopoly on.
Well, if Christianity,
there are other religions too that preach of a similar redemption story.
Well, if Christianity were true, right? We're saying theoretically, if Christianity were true, then Jesus Christ says in the New Testament, "I am the way, the truth, and the life." No man comes to the Father but by me. So if Christianity were true, then it does have the corner, a monopoly on redemption. If it's not true, if the teachings of the New Testament are accurate of Christ, then Christianity has a monopoly on eternal life. And
on
if it's not...
Life, not necessarily redemption.
Well,
that's a different thing.
If you think eternity in hell apart from God might be redemption, Stacks, then maybe. But if Christianity is true, right, then Jesus rose from the dead, and that's the central fact of all of history. And so it would be really foolish to reject Christianity for some alternative gamble with your eternal soul.
That's Pascal's wager, which is what you're discussing.
Yeah, and even the New Testament says if Christ did not rise from the dead— then we Christians are fools.
Right.
Right? Because there's
Which I
one
would say is probably true.
Well, and if he did not, and that shows Christianity is falsifiable, at least at some various levels.
Well, it is falsifiable and it has been falsified.
Well, we disagree.
At least from the angle of biblical literalists, which is I think the position that you often take.
I believe the Bible is the Word of God. And we know right from wrong because there is a God. He's written it on our hearts and in His Word. And that
let's take some of the stories of the Bible just briefly. I'm not a biblical scholar, but like the story of Babel, for example.
Mm.
Do you believe that story is literally true? That literally happened, or do you think that's more of a metaphor for why we have different languages? That people back then didn't have the explanation. So they came up with a story that was entertaining that kind of tried to explain that.
Well, we have done two shows recently on Real Science Friday about the origin of language.
Right.
And we talk through how the world's leading linguists, leading experts, have completely, I'm talking about the secular atheistic world, whether it's Noam Chomsky.
Well, secular and atheist are two different.
Oh, well, I know that. But generally speaking, Edward Sapir or MIT, they have rejected and debunked Darwin's view that language is based on the grunts and cries of animals, demonstrating that language is fundamentally different. Animals that grow up isolated could still bark and issue their cries, but language is a fundamentally different phenomenon. And when Darwin thought that we could find primitive languages all over the world among native peoples, it's been demonstrated conclusively that there is no such thing as a primitive language in the world. Some languages have smaller vocabularies, but they are all extremely sophisticated. And when we track back languages, we could go back to about 100 language groups in early in recorded human history. That's about as far back as we can get. And there is no thousands or tens of thousands of years of evidence of the evolution of language. So I would say that the Bible's
recently about how language might have developed through the evolutionary processes and the idea of cooperating cooperation to work together.
Sure, Stack.
Evolutional advantage.
Stacks, I agree that evolutionists could always do storytelling. And they could always say...
You said I should correct you if you made a mistake.
Yeah.
There's no really such thing as an evolutionist any more than there is a gravityist.
Okay, people who believe in Darwin. I agree. People who believe in Darwin...
There's no really who believe in Darwin. Darwin's not like the pope of
the Darwinian mechanism. The Darwinian mechanism, okay, that we get... All the species we see today all originated from an original, simpler life form.
It's the scientific theory.
People who believe in that. How could you give me a word that I could use to describe them so I don't have to say a sentence every time I want to refer to them?
Okay, I would say just scientists or, you know, using the scientific method.
There are thousands of scientists who reject Darwinism, and we've been interviewing many of them for decades.
The idea of Darwinism... is not really a real thing.
Okay, well, whatever that thing is that
the
people...
The theory of evolution has evolved a great deal from
Stax,
Darwin. Stax,
I have a feeling that we will really enjoy our conversation more if we cut each other a little bit of slack, be gracious toward one another.
I'll try it.
And if I say evolutionist, you could translate that in whatever way you're comfortable with. The people who believe we've evolved... from primates and way back to an amoeba and before that, all right?
Right. I just wanted to make it clear to your audience.
Okay, so people who believe all that, they can do storytelling and they could say, here's how we think language evolved.
Right.
But I was talking about evidence, and the evidence is, according to the people we just described, that Darwin was wrong, that language is not a more sophisticated form of grunts, that they're... are no primitive languages in the world. And in fact, when we study the history of language, we dead end at sophisticated languages already on the scene just thousands of years ago. And that is all consistent with the biblical story of the origin of languages. And it's inconsistent with Darwin's view.
So the answer then is you do believe
that
Babel is literal.
Yes, I do.
Okay.
Do you want to go to morality and God in our two topics, or would you prefer to? Okay.
Sure.
So, Stax, you selected first the subject of right and wrong.
Right.
Would you say that's one of your strong suits? You're an atheist.
I'd say I'm fairly competent. I know a good deal about that.
Okay. So. So I have a quote from something you wrote in one of your blogs, but would you like to start this part of the discussion?
Let's hear your quote. I'll respond.
All right. You wrote in a blog titled, Is There Moral Grounding Without God? You wrote that morality isn't all absolute.
Right.
And so I'm wondering if you feel confident, which parts of morality are absolute, which parts are not?
Well, we have this dichotomy of absolute versus subjective or situational. And some morality is situational, and some is absolute. Now, right now, there's a great book by Sam Harris called The Moral Landscape.
He's one of your top two atheists that you enjoy.
Yeah, he's up there.
Right. I only say that because you wrote that on your blog somewhere.
Yeah, I probably did because I do admire him a lot.
Yeah.
His book, The Moral Landscape, just came out where he's laying the ground for a scientific view of morality using neuroscience as the basis. Now, I think that this idea predates Sam Harris's book, but what he brings in is the idea of neuroscience being used to kind of confirm some of these things.
So that some atoms, neuroscience, are neurons in our brain. They transmit
right.
chemical electrical signals,
mm-hmm.
and we
and
could.
He's done brain imaging and that sort of thing.
Yeah. So that right or wrong would be defined based on the way some atoms crash into other atoms, and
essentially, yes. It's a little bit more complex than that, but. The way our minds are is we're trying to find well-being for everyone, and our brains are kind of connected to kind of figure out how to do that.
So he's using science, right, to try to determine right from wrong.
Right.
And presumably his five senses. Go ahead.
Is with a more landscape. You can go on YouTube and Google his name and Moral Landscape, and he has a ton of speeches. Some of them are an hour long. They kind of go through a summary of his book and some of his ideas.
Mm-hmm.
But the idea being is there may be multiple positive morality,
sure.
Multiple peaks on the moral landscape,
and
if you will.
People who are materialists who believe that the only reality is a material, physical reality— they have
right,
to
that
try.
Is what reality means.
They have to try. That's a circular claim you're making. You'd have to demonstrate that. And I'll try to give you evidence to the contrary, Stacks, from Albert mm-hmm. Einstein in a response that he would probably have if he were here today speaking to Sam Harris. I could quote from him a very brief quote.
Right.
In fact, over a period of 15 years, Einstein would return to this idea of the matter, a physical universe, and
mm-hmm.
then ideas and value judgments. And Einstein wrote, well, he described what's called today an Einstein's gulf by
mm-hmm.
linguists and some scientists about the ability to get from matter to ideas. And
right.
in 1944, he was writing about Bertrand Russell, and he described a gulf logically unbridgeable. Because ideas are not physical. They're not made up of atoms. We could
we could
transmit ideas at the
mm-hmm.
speed of light over fiber optics, but we can't transmit matter at the speed of light. We can't do that.
Not yet.
Well,
Einstein laid the ground for that with his general theory of relativity.
Well, for us to transmit a spaceship at the speed of light, we would need virtually an infinite amount of energy. We'd have to turn the whole universe into energy to do that. But,
or the spaceship into energy and do that.
No, you'd need enough energy. But, okay, let's get to Einstein's quote
right.
in 1950. This is what he wrote. He wrote that science can only ascertain what is, but not what should be.
Right.
Necessarily, then, excluding...
This is an ought problem.
Yeah, excluding from its domain, quote, value judgments of all kinds. So
right.
science can't tell you whether it's wrong to lynch a black man. Right? Or to tear...
Well, Sam Harris is claiming that it can.
Well, which of the laws of science use the terms right and wrong?
Right. None of the laws we have now. Well, what Sam Harris is talking about in his book is that we can figure out what actions would best contribute to the well-being of everyone. And while...
Well, that's his
right.
preference, right? Some people don't care about the well-being of everyone. Like, for example, slave traders.
Right,
they don't
right.
care
that's
about
the
well-being.
Utilitarian problem.
Yeah.
Right.
So which of the laws of science mm-hmm. would be able to authoritatively,
right.
not your opinion or mine or the majority
right.
or the minority, authoritatively say it's wrong to kidnap black children
right.
and allow
well,
them to be
I'm
raped
saying.
And
with
forced
this
into
new
labor?
New idea of neuroscience, we get pleasure when we help people, and that's been demonstrated over and over again. These are things that we can figure out. We can figure out using the scientific method what actions are going to have what consequences to some degree.
And we can take
actions accordingly.
And some people are ascetic in their worldview, and they try to deny pleasure. They're
right.
opposed to pleasure. And they might bury themselves in the sand up to their neck and be miserable and think that.
Right.
So even if you were to establish, in fact, a lot of right
but
and
even
good.
Even those people within certain, that's only in certain contexts. See, I think you're trying to simplify things that are much more complex.
Well,
than,
so
than
so
we're
what you
credit for.
So to not simplify so far. Mm-hmm. What is the standard of right and wrong? You think it might come from science, although none of the existing laws of science use the words right and wrong.
Science,
they don't even deal with the topic.
Science isn't really about law. It's about a method, scientific method of investigating a claim and going through a process.
And would you say that atheism is the conclusion of the scientific method or is the
not
assumption that's used in the scientific method?
Not necessarily. It's it depends on the atheist.
Well, I'm asking you.
Well, for me, I originally left religion out of an emotional problem, not a problem of critical thinking.
Stacks,
then,
could
later
we?
In life,
we're out of time.
I re-examined using critical thinking.
All right, Stacks, we're out of time in this segment. Could you hang on? We'll continue.
Sure.
All right, super. Thank you for that. And KGOV.com, KGOV.com, you can share the show with others.